Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Said it once, I've said it a million times on this show. Trust is gained in drops and lost in buckets. And when you tip that bucket over, that's when you really got to get to work. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests will join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, who, before we get to anything else, I have seen the colors around here for Chris Canty, for our producer Shannon Penn, for Ryan Clark. Pretty important day for you guys. Huh, Chris?
Absolutely. I'd be remiss if I didn't wish a happy Founders Day to the good brothers of Kappa Alpha Psi. Happy J5. I want you guys to celebrate safely and shimmy responsibly. You know what that can lead to if you do it irresponsibly. So just want to give a shout out to the good brothers, man. You know I got my crimson and cream on and I'm repping proudly.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw Ryan Clark hit that shimmy on SportsCenter the other day. So it has been loud and proud across the network right there. So
slightly more complicated than the gritty dance. Slightly. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying.
When them shoulder rolls get going, man, I'm telling you.
That is true.
Get out of hand.
I mean, listen, I've seen Adam Schefter attempt to do the gritty, so that one is pretty accessible to everybody. To move the shoulders like that, you got to have something a little more special to you.
Absolutely, and it helps to have a little nuke juice to go along with it, too. Just a little bit of lubricant.
Just a little. That's all it is, man. Just a little bit of lubricant in that situation here. So, Chris, we talk about trust, as we heard in the open right there. We have seen in the world of sports this pop up time and time again, where I'm just going to lay out this scenario generally, and you can tell me who it's about here. A team takes a hardline stance on a player who comes in with a bit of a history into a situation and decides, you know what, we are not going to tolerate what's going on in this situation. We are going to stick by the virtues we have as an organization, and we are going to make sure that we don't let them pass that, only to then watch that talented player who they have previously said, we are not going to make excuses or exceptions for, get whatever they wanted in that situation, because eventually the season and the sport dictated that that talent was necessary on the athletic surface.
Well, yeah, you know, talent is always going to outweigh all the baggage that could potentially come along with superstar players, and that's exactly where we find ourselves with the Kyrie Irving situation. Now, we also know that the Nets have been impacted by COVID, having a lot of guys having to miss games, having to sit out, and so from a body count standpoint, it just makes sense to add all the players that you possibly can, and this Kyrie Irving situation was a simple fix of sorts, because you can't have him as a part-time player on the road. Now, the thing that I think is going to be interesting is how Steve Nash handles the rotations, the overall chemistry of the guys when they're on the floor, and dealing with Kyrie Irving being in and out of the lineup. Gojo, as you know, high-level athletes are creatures of habit, man. And so to have that constant disruption on top of the built-in excuse of not having Kyrie Irving available for home games, I'm wondering how the Brooklyn Nets organization and how the coaching staff is going to handle this Kyrie Irving situation, especially in the first couple of weeks of this thing, because, again, it is throwing everybody off their square with his presence now being back with the team.
Yeah, but we've seen that only matters so much, right? And I did a poor job of setting it up here because I generalize as is to say, this is very similar to what we just saw with Antonio Brown and the Bucks, right? Like, these organizations are only going to stand on morality and stand on principle for so long until it's necessary. But you're right. When you listen to Steve Nash and everyone talk about it inside this organization, the thought process is pretty simple. Hey, we didn't realize how much of an impact COVID was going to be in this NBA season. Clearly, the entire league didn't realize that. That's why this thing looks like a complete mess right now. And now that we've got that, now that we're signing 10-day guys left and right and picking up people in the parking lot and all this, like, getting Kyrie Irving back in this role is much less of a risk. But I'm with you, Chris. The long-term plan is the interesting part I'm looking for tonight as he gets set to make his debut against the Indiana Pacers. Is they said they're not going to start him. They said he's going to play a big chunk, though. It's not going to be 38, 40 minutes, but it's going to be a fair amount here. Like, Chris, can you really ever make him a consistent starter going forward? Is that something you can do to your team knowing he is only going to be intermittently available the way we've seen plenty of other players through this course of the season?
Well, here's the thing. I don't put it past Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and James Harden being able to figure out a way to make it work if Kyrie's in the starting lineup. Those guys are just too good at what they do. Their basketball IQ is through the roof. And from a talent standpoint and a skills perspective, like, those guys can make it work. They can figure this thing out on the fly. The thing that I'm concerned with is just the disruption with all the other guys, all of the other role players that have kind of settled in with the duo between James Harden and Kevin Durant kind of feeling their way and having an understanding of what they're going to be asked to do in order to have this team compete at a high level. When you have Kyrie Irving available for the road games versus him not being available for the home games, where does it leave those goons? Because ultimately we know the Brooklyn Nets are going to be carried by James Harden, Kevin Durant, and then hopefully Kyrie Irving. But you're also going to have some role players step up and make some plays. And that's the part that concerns me a little bit. We know that when the big three is on the floor, that's a good thing for the Brooklyn Nets. Last year, they were 11-3 in their 14 games on the court together. And then we saw in the postseason, that trio averaged 85 points a game when they played together. That's the most in NBA history. So we know when those three get together, they can make it happen. But I'm just concerned about what happens to other pieces on this team and how that affects what they're going to be capable of contributing as the Brooklyn Nets try to gear up for a postseason run.
Yeah, Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And right now we know it's not all that important how this works out, right? Like, generally, this is a time of year where normally you're weathering injuries. Now you're doing it with COVID to an even higher level where it's, hey, we just need people on the court, try and fine-tune some things, play guy, you know, guys have played themselves into shape at this point in the season. And then as you go down the stretch, it's starting to work through the rotations that are going to be important for you come the playoffs, come the end of the season. But Chris, as we got a schedule on ESPN.com that lets us know between the home games that Kyrie Irving cannot play in and the games in Canada that Kyrie Irving cannot play in because of the rules when you cross the border to go play the Toronto Raptors, the 22 some odd games Kyrie Irving will be able to play in down the stretch. And that's before we get to the postseason, where now you'd almost have a hockey line change version of your starting lineup with Kyrie Irving suiting up for you when you go on those road games versus when you go home to the Barclays Center. I'm fascinated how they deploy it. And right, you're right. They've got a high margin for error because of the talented players that are already there in the building. But the difference when you're at the top going up against Philadelphia, going up against the, you know, this year, the Chicago Bulls, going up against the Milwaukee Bucks, that's going to be the spot where I think this could eventually come back to bite them.
Listen, the Nets don't seem to mind. Kyrie is going to do them just fine being a part-time player. It seems like that's the direction that they're going with this thing. I think it will be interesting, though, and I thought it was telling when Steve Nash said he's not only considering what's happening in the short term, but also what happens in the midterm and the long term. Gojo, I'm still of the mind that the door is open for Kyrie Irving to potentially be moved at the trade deadline. I look at this, depending on how it goes over the course of the next month or so, I think there's going to be a serious evaluation within the front office of the Brooklyn Nets on whether or not they'll be able to move Kyrie Irving for some substantive pieces that could complement what James Harden and Kevin Durant are bringing to the table. Just from the standpoint of Kyrie Irving has shown himself to be a volatile player. He's unreliable, and I think that's impacted how James Harden views the Brooklyn Nets long term. Right now, we know he's locked in, but we also know that he rejected a contract extension that was offered to him at the beginning of the season. So there's a lot of wait and see with James Harden, and I think a lot of it is dependent on how the Brooklyn Nets handle Kyrie Irving. So I think you got to have one eye on the present and one eye to the future if you're Sean Marks, their general manager, in terms of how you handle this Kyrie Irving situation. Because I think it's great that they're getting him back from a talent standpoint. He's the best ball handler in the world. But how does that fit into what you're trying to do this season and competing for a championship, but then also with this window that you've bought yourself with Kevin Durant and James Harden as well?
Yeah, Chris, I completely agree with you. I think the best thing for the Nets, if Kyrie Irving is going to come back, the best possible outcome for them is that he plays well enough for them to trade for something meaningful down the stretch. Because this is the exact same conversation we're having about two players as far as their functionality within the team when it comes to Antonio Brown and when it comes to Kyrie Irving. Ultimately, you have guys that have shown themselves not dependable in the area you need them most as a player and as a teammate on the rest of that team here. That is going to be the thing that could ultimately undermine championship efforts on both counts here. So what would be the best opportunity if you could get him to a spot in a team where he can play every game? Because they're not, like, everyone, for everyone that's forgotten, these are rules that apply to the Brooklyn Nets, the teams in New York, and the teams in San Francisco, meaning the Golden State Warriors. Those teams have rules where unvaccinated home team players cannot play in that home arena because of local ordinances. So I still think the best opportunity, you get Kyrie Irving, come back, ball out in this middle portion of the season where he's playing against, you know, Jimmy's and Joe's on the other side, signed on 10-day contracts who haven't played in 8 years, and managed to flip him for something consistent and reliable that you can build on not only for this season, but into the future. We want to hear from you on that also. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. Bowl season's heating up and the fans are hype. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. What is the best outcome for the Brooklyn Nets with Kyrie Irving's return set to take place tonight? We'll get into plenty more on that. But coming up next, we also got to look at how teams are getting ready to approach uncharted territory, week 18 in the NFL's regular season. We'll take a look at a couple of key players after this word from Body Armor. All right, guys, let Body Armor light come show up and help you achieve your fitness goals this year. It's the new year, new me. You're getting ready to get right. Got my sister's wedding coming up in April here. Starting to lock it in. Can't legally tell you lose weight. Tighten. Gonna tighten. Body Armor Light is here to help with that. Body Armor Light is the low-calorie sports drink that's hydrating your active lifestyle. It has no artificial sweeteners, no sugar added, and only 20 calories per 16-ounce bottle. Athletes like Mike Trout, Sabrina Ionescu, Dustin Johnson all use Body Armor Light to stay hydrated, so why not give it a try? From now until April 30th, you buy $20 of any Body Armor product, and you're going to earn $10 in fitness cash to select fitness retailers nationwide. Learn more at bacommittofit.com. That's bacommittofit.com.
I don't think there's a single part of the Dallas Cowboys that I trust.
Do I trust the Dallas Cowboys? They tricked us last week, man.
When someone shows you who they are, believe them? Dallas over this last stretch has shown us this is who they're going to be on offense right now. I can trust their defense, Chris. They're great, but I can't expect this offense to be something they have not been for a while now. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. It's time for Straight Talk. Brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. God, anytime I hear all that, I think of the late, great Denny Green. They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
And how fitting was it that they lost to the Arizona Cardinals, too, Denny Green's former team?
I mean, sometimes things truly do feel like a bit of cosmic poetry right there. We got to make sure we keep that Denny Green quote in rotation here so the youth of America understands just how important that is.
They are who we thought they were.
It was great. It was great. That was epic. Wasn't that the Monday night game against the Chicago Bears?
Yep.
Yeah. That was an awesome game.
You want to crown their asses, then crown them.
The Bears are who we thought they were. That's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their but they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
It's so good, man.
It's great. But to your point, though, Gojo, let me tell you who we not going to crown. The Dallas Cowboys. Just not going to do it. Can't do it.
No, and Chris, that's the tough part that we're at now with this season is we're at that point where we should kind of know and understand who most everybody is. Outside of teams that have dealt with rampant injury through the course of the season, teams who are trying to, you know, figure out who they're going to get back between COVID and everything else from here on out, the Dallas Cowboys are one of those teams that we've seen offensively is not going to blow you away. They did the first 4 weeks of the season. It's a defensive-led football team with a lot of highly paid parts on offense, but it is still a team that we know is going to be a part of this postseason and now has a decision to make here, Chris. It used to be week 17. It's now week 18. But as we stare at situations like this for the Dallas Cowboys, like what Lamar Jackson and the Ravens have coming up, different ideas because the Dallas Cowboys potentially playing for seeding, potentially playing to improve their stock, albeit slim chances, versus the Ravens trying to fight for their playoff lives, even though the margin is slim here. You've got quarterbacks in Dak Prescott. You've got quarterbacks in Lamar Jackson who teams are weighing the prospect of playing here. We heard from Jerry Jones that he said Dak's going to play. We're going to try and win this Week 18 game against the Eagles. Is that the right call, Chris?
I don't think it is. I don't think Dak has any business being out there on the field, nor do any of the key guys that the Cowboys are going to be depending on in Wild Card Weekend, man. The most important thing, the most important ability is availability. And I just think the priority for Mike McCarthy has to be to make sure that you get your guys to the tournament as healthy as you possibly can. This is a team that's had injury concerns throughout the course of this season. They've also had some guys out due to COVID. I just think that when you have the ability to control one of those factors, then you take that power in your own hands. And Mike McCarthy has the ability to do that because ultimately the Dallas Cowboys don't have a lot to gain by going out there with their best players this weekend. I know that there's the potential for them to have the 2 seed, but that will require the Arizona Cardinals losing to Seattle and the Los Angeles Rams losing to the San Francisco 49ers. They need both of those things to happen. I think there's it's highly unlikely that that takes place. So for me, it's all about taking a conservative approach and making sure that you get Dak Prescott to the game as healthy as he possibly can be. We've seen him kind of slow down throughout the course of this season. He's missed some games due to injury this season. It just seems like this is a spot where it makes sense to go ahead and let your quarterback rest up and get ready for when it really matters, to get ready for the games that you paid him $40 million a year for. Listen, under any other circumstances, I would usually, you know, advocate for players being able to play in that final regular season game to build some momentum. And then you couple the fact that you are going up against a division opponent, but the Philadelphia Eagles have already punched their ticket to the dance. So there's no way that you can knock them out by handing them a loss in week 18. So just doesn't seem like there's the risk outweighs the benefit outweighs the risk. It just doesn't seem like that's the case in this situation. They need to sit Dak down, get him ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, I would say Dak and probably a number of other players, right, Chris? Because this is the other part of this. You have had nagging injuries along a lot of the important parts of your offense, whether it's Tyron Smith, your left tackle, who we saw struggle in some matchups against Chandler Jones in the last game. We know Zeke's had issues this season. The rest of that O-line, you could have a chance to sit all of those guys as you get ready for a postseason that, like you said, getting the 2 seed potentially, being able to host some home playoff games in that spot through a certain portion, potentially beneficial. But at this point, man, if you're not that 1 seed with the bye, we've seen, I mean, that's really the only true differentiator when we look at the playoff standings relative to that portion of things, the seeding jockeying that goes on here. Health is going to be the key for this Cowboys team because you're not going to go out there and prove to us that you're something that we already know you're not, right? The Cowboys could go out there and light it up against the Philadelphia Eagles. That wouldn't have me believing that when push came to shove against a marquee opponent in the playoffs, Chris, that all of a sudden we were going to see the team that put up big numbers against the Washington football team's defense and maybe got over on a Philadelphia Eagles defense that wasn't motivated because they're already pretty locked in here. That's not going to prove to us anything that we don't already know.
No doubt about it, but to push back on that slightly, Gojo, outside of the Washington football team game a couple of weeks ago, when's the last time you've been impressed by the Dallas Cowboys offense?
Yeah, all
would you, go back to the New England game, maybe?
Yeah, that's probably realistically it, Chris.
So, I mean, it's been a long time since that unit has played really good football. So it's not like they couldn't use the work. It's not like they couldn't use the tune-up. But, again, you have to weigh the risk of your guys potentially getting injured and being unavailable for the postseason run. And to me, that just doesn't make any sense. Like, there are problems that this offense has, clearly. I mean, listening to Jordan Hicks do an interview on another network, the host asked him point blank, why were they able to have so much success against that Dallas offense? And he said that it started with them stopping the run, holding the Cowboys to 2.9 yards a carry. The Dallas Cowboys offense has been largely one-dimensional. They can't run the football, especially when it matters. That has to change going into the postseason. But I don't know how much we're going to glean from them if they go out there and have a huge performance against the Philadelphia Eagles, because we know that that team really isn't playing for much going into week 18 because they're already going to be in the wild card.
No, and this is a team, to your point, Chris, what they can go out there and do. Yeah, they could use the vote of confidence, but this is also not an offense that's come together in its first year, right? This isn't Tom Brady and the Bucs from last year, who every rep during the regular season mattered because it was their first together. The core of this offense has been there a long time. So while they haven't struggled, or they haven't played up to the potential of what we thought for the majority of this season, that group has so much time under task together that I worry less about that. And again, when push comes to shove, the value prop against health, it skews in favor of health overwhelmingly in this situation with the Cowboys. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. We can get to one other quarterback that we think this applies to as we head to week 18 for very different reasons, like we mentioned for Lamar Jackson. But coming up next, we get to this point in every season where someone starts to look up at Tom Brady and get ready to say the thing. We had one of our football analysts brave enough to go out here and say the thing in public on the biggest platform on the show yesterday. We will examine the body next here on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Danny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. Reminding you guys to check out the Man in the Arena podcast, a 10-part series exploring how sports impacts our lives through the lens of Tom Brady's career, available wherever you get your podcasts and brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Need to finance a home like a pro? Rocket can. And that's the perfect way to intro this conversation, because no one at this network has digested more of the man in the arena than our own Chris Canty. Chris, was it like just purely driven by the desire to see them talk about the season where you guys beat Tom Brady in the Super Bowl?
Well, certainly that season makes my Super Bowl ring shine a little bit brighter. The fact that Tom Brady continues to roll along and win championships. But I'm just fascinated by the fact that this guy at age 44 continues to play at an MVP-type level, Gojo. I mean, I've been out of the NFL for 6 years, and this guy came in the league, what, 1998, 1999, and just continues to roll along? It's just incredible what Tom Brady has been able to accomplish. And so I just have the utmost respect, and it's really just that fascination of how does this guy continue to motivate himself after he's already clearly separated himself from the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history and ascended to that GOAT status. Like, how do you continue to put that chip on your shoulder every single day when you go out there to practice, every single meeting when you go in to do film study, every single game, no matter who the opponent is? How does he continue to do it? I just want to know what the secret sauce is. And so I think the Man in the Arena docuseries and the podcast helps to pull back the curtain on what makes Tom Brady tick and what allows him to have this level of success be sustained over the course of two decades in the NFL.
Would you have watched if you guys lost that Super Bowl?
Hell no. Hell no.
All right.
No chance. I got
to
keep it real, man. Like, there's no way I'm watching that, because you know that's going to come up.
Yep.
And do you know how bad that would hurt? Like, I mean, that would, like, in between the nines, man, that would hurt. No, but seriously, though, I get it. As a fan, it hurts. But as a player, everything that you've got invested into that season, everything that you've got invested in your career to get you to that moment. And for me, it was my only trip to the Super Bowl to get there and to be on the losing side of it and see the confetti come down in the other team's colors. Well, I guess the Patriots and the Giants have the same colors. But you know what I mean? Like, for all of that to happen and then to walk off the field and watch them hold up the Lombardi, to get to the airport, and then to have the airport force you to wait so they can fly out first, like, that would all be bad. There's no way I want to there was no way that I would want to relive that pain by watching this docuseries had we lost Super Bowl 46. No shot.
Are you serious, man? You really had to just put me through all of that again?
A lot of scar tissue here for your co-host, Chris.
I'm just saying, man. Like, everything you just described happened to me.
What do you want me to?
Happened to me. You didn't have to go into such intimate detail. I know all those details. I had the loser confetti rain down on me. I had to look at Nick Saban and watch him hold what was then, I think, objectively the coolest trophy in sports, that crystal football
Got. The Waterford crystal?
Yeah.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Oh,
that was beautiful.
It was incredible, and I prayed to God that old man dropped it when I saw him holding it over there. Because it should have been ours, even though we weren't really ever close to being ours in that game. So, yeah, Chris, I know all those feelings about going to the post-game party that they already have lined up for your team, no matter win or lose, and having to drink the sad beers at the end of the night, and then getting up on stage and my buddy Pat was playing guitar and singing Colder Weather by Zac Brown Band, which is not a song you sing when you're celebrating anything that happened here. So, whew.
Needless to say, you're not watching any Nick Saban documentaries. You're not watching the Art of Coaching with him and Bill Belichick or anything like that, huh?
Nah. He can kick every rock.
Nick in the Arena.
Yeah. Nick in the Arena will not be on in the Golic household. But for all of that, for everything Chris and I just mentioned right there, there are a few of the warrior elite in sports like that. Tom Brady, Nick Saban, and for my money, LeBron James right now in the world of sports, both collegiate and professional, even though collegiate is professional, stay woke. All of those people, all those three, are going to be the ones that I will be the last to turn the lights out on, right? The last one to doubt in any sort of meaningful way. We had someone step up brave enough to say the thing. As we get ready to head into a postseason where Tom Brady has had another borderline MVP year and is getting ready to have his Tampa Bay Buccaneers likely represent as the 3 seed in the NFC playoffs, Dominique Foxworth, former NFL defensive back, current writer at the Undefeated Football Analyst Force, was on First Take on Tuesday with Jeff Saturday, and he said the thing.
I'm alone on this island, probably. You can cut this clip and get it ready for Man in the Arena Part 2 and put it out there when he wins another Super Bowl, because I think he's done. Like, the man has 7 Super Bowls. And also, the one that they won last year, like, I would never go as far as to say winning a Super Bowl was lucky. It wasn't lucky, but, like, they got a lot of breaks in their direction. And Tom Brady is going to continue to need these breaks. And at some point, we don't say Father Time is undefeated because it sounds cute. We say it's because it's true. So if he's going to have 3, 4, more years, which is a stretch of this top-level performance, you also need a defense to stand up, which it doesn't look like that defense is going to be able to do this year. You're also going to need some offensive guys to step up and make plays throughout the course of the playoffs, and it doesn't seem like they're going to have those guys. Like Godwin coming back, or excuse me, Evans coming back off of soft tissue injury, you're not going to get him at full speed. Same thing for Leonard Fournette. I do think that we have to accept that Tom Brady's made getting to and winning Super Bowls look easy. It is freaking hard.
So he said the thing. Tom Brady's won his last Super Bowl. Dominique, I just want to bathe in it for a second here right now, because again, that takes a lot of bravery to do what Dominique just did, because like he said, when we eventually get the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Super Bowl DVD pack or whatever the equivalent is now in the streaming age after they win this Super Bowl, when they get the SI cover that you can buy, the commemorative one that you got to call the 800 number to get, Dominique Foxworth analysis right there is going to be on front street on that.
No doubt about it. But here's the thing. I don't understand why Neek and others want to be the first one to the party to bury Tom Brady and to say that he's never going to compete at a championship level again. Like, I don't understand it. It makes no sense to me. I remember people were saying that back in 2014. Was it Max Kellerman?
Yeah, it was Max.
Like, Max Kellerman on the record said, Tom Brady will never win another Super Bowl. All he's gone on to do is win four more Super Bowls. 2014, 2016, the biggest comeback in Super Bowl history, not to mention the first overtime game in Super Bowl history, 2018, and then last year in 2020. This is what this dude does. Father Time is undefeated, except for when it comes to Tom Brady. I don't know whether he signed a deal with the devil in blood or what, but I will never discount this dude. Like, I will never count Tom Brady out for competing for championships until Tom Brady is retired and no longer playing football. Now, this year, he's got some adverse circumstances because some pieces on the team that he was going to be leaning on aren't going to be available to him. That doesn't mean that they still don't have enough to be able to make a run. Now, Dominique's point about the defense is valid, but you're going to get some pieces back on that side of the ball. Shaq Barrett and JPP are going to come back on that side of the ball. And if you remember Super Bowl 55 last year, that was a situation where that front seven and those defensive linemen dominated that game and had Pat Mahomes running for his life. So I'm not going to dismiss the fact that Tom Brady could compete for a championship this year, but certainly throughout the course of this window that Tampa Bay has over the course of the next two or three years, Tom Brady is going to continue to compete at a championship level. Gojo, we haven't seen any drop-off in terms of his level of play. So to be dismissive of his chances of winning a championship just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, no, you and I both live with the same healthy fear of Tom Brady. Quite yes. Honestly, not even when he retires, until he is dead and in the grave, I will fear his ability to come off and find a way to win a Lombardi trophy. I know he's going to have that in his bag. What I want to ask you and anyone on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed, at Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Caney 99, or 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. If I have got to make you bet money against one of them in the next 3 years, Nick Saban, LeBron James, Tom Brady, who are you betting against? Because right now where we sit, LeBron James seems to be the clear-cut answer. Like, that to me seems pretty easy.
Why? Again, Gojo, you're hitting me right here, man. You're getting me right there because you know I'm a Lakers fan and you know I'm rooting for Bron. But it seems like that's the right answer in this one. Yeah. I mean, it's multiple choice. It seems like that's the only way you can go. With the way Nick Saban is rolling and then what Tom Brady is doing in Tampa, yeah, I think Bron ends up being the guy.
Yeah, I mean, just based off the physical requirements for each job, I am going to one day have to prepare my young kids as I send them off to college and say, all right, the guy you're getting ready to go up against, his name is Nick Saban. He took me down. He's taken a lot of other people down along the way. And in the year 2045, he's getting ready to take you down too. At Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Caney on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. Brady, Saban, or LeBron, who you betting against in the next three seasons here? Coming up next, though. Aaron Rodgers has been the focal point of so much of this MVP season, this NFL season, that could likely end in an MVP for all of the wrong reasons this year. We have now found someone willing to make him out to look like the good guy. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Caney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Caney. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll talk to Christian Winfield, does a great job covering the Brooklyn Nets over at the New York Post. Excited to look forward to Kyrie Irving's return to the court for the Nets tonight against the Pacers. Again, it's a road game because he can't play in the home game. So what to expect as we get ready for his return coming up in about 10 minutes here. New York Daily News. Christian Winfield going to join us in about 10 minutes here. That being said, Chris, I have to ask you, did you know that there are only 50 members of the media Associated Press that get a vote for the MVP award?
I did not know that. I thought it would be a few more folks that got a chance to chime in and vote on the MVP award. I didn't know that it was such a small pool of voters.
Yeah, the NFL MVP award, I should say. And the reason that has become relevant information that we will all now know in a trivia question is because as we near the end of the season, where Aaron Rodgers is the runaway MVP favorite at this point after the strong close to the season, voter Hub Arkush is one of the 50 members of the media that is getting a vote. He went on 670 The Score in Chicago and said that he would not be voting for Aaron Rodgers for MVP because he's a jerk and, quote, a bad guy. He said, quote, I don't think you can have the biggest jerk in the league and punish your team and your organization and your fan base the way he did and be the most valuable player. Chris, it pains me, but I think somehow in all of this, this guy coming out and saying one of the dumber things that you could in this given situation has actually, at least for a brief moment, made Aaron Rodgers seem like a redeemable figure in this conversation.
Yeah, Hub wishes he could reel that one back in. I don't know that he needed to make his feelings about this public, although we knew that there were going to be some voters that held what Aaron Rodgers did this offseason and held the immunization thing or misleading the media openly, they were going to hold those things against him because those things embarrassed his teammates and embarrassed his organization, and it embarrassed the media with not being able to follow up and ask more questions so we could get a clearer picture as to what his vaccination status actually was at the start of the season. So I think there are a lot of people that are a part of the media that feel a way about Aaron Rodgers, yours truly included. But yeah, Hub probably shouldn't have put this out there for public consumption. But the reality is that the MVP vote, Gojo, is not just something that comes down to numbers. It's not just about what happens on the field, although we'd like to think it's confined to that. It also entails the intangibles surrounding a player's presence on that team, how it affects the culture in the locker room, the culture throughout the organization. All of those things matter. And I'm not saying that those things are the most important, but when we come down to these votes that are closely contested, those things can ultimately end up making the difference. So I think that that's something that's always going to be factored in. If it was just about the numbers, if it was strictly confined to stuff that happens on the field, then we wouldn't actually need voters. All we have to do is look up who has the best QBR and go ahead and award the MVP award to that person. But that's not how it goes. So intangibles are also factored in. Storylines are factored in. And so for people being overly critical of Hub for saying he shouldn't consider any other factors outside of what we've seen Aaron Rodgers do on the field this year, they're being a little bit hypocritical because we know that in every MVP vote, that stuff factors in. Usually it's in the positive, but this time it's being held against Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, it does factor in, but he's saying it is the reason I am not voting for him, and that's intolerably short-sighted in this conversation. And it gives Aaron Rodgers exactly what he wants, right? We saw Aaron Rodgers come out and give the quote that he thinks Hub's an absolute bum. His problem is I'm not vaccinated.
He's a bum?
Yeah.
He's a bum.
First, if it were to just stop there, incredible quote if he just came out and called him a bum. And I don't know Hub Arkush. I don't have any feelings about him. I'm just quoting Aaron Rodgers on this. But then Aaron gets to do exactly what he wants, Chris, which is say his problem is I'm not vaccinated. Maybe just for this season, make it the most vaccinated player award.
Come on, man. Stop it, Aaron Rodgers. It's not because you're not vaccinated. Listen, there is some merit to what Hub is saying. You are a jerk. Like, I played against you. I competed against you. You're a jerk. There are a lot of people in and around NFL circles that don't like you. There are a lot of people around this country that don't like you. It has nothing to do with your vaccination status. You can choose to be vaccinated or not vaccinated. People don't like the fact that you misled them earlier in the season with the whole immunized thing. That's what it comes down to. So don't make this about not liking people that are unvaccinated, because that's not what this is about at all.
Remember,
stop it.
This is one voter out of 50. We have to keep that in mind, that this is not going to be the prevailing ideology, that Aaron Rodgers is going to win the MVP, and he should, based on what he's done on the field. We don't need to give easy layups to people who want to make bad faith arguments here. We will get to more of that, but coming up next, Kyrie Irving status heading into tonight.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.